I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, as part of our ongoing community conversation, we're going to talk about neighborhoods. We're going to talk about what makes them thrive, what makes them die, and why they're important. My guests will be Bill Taft, Executive Director of the Local Initiative Support Corporation of Indianapolis, Amandala Anderson, Executive Director of the United Northeast Community Development Corporation, and Imhotep Adiza, Executive Director of the KI Echo Center. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits at WFYI.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about neighborhoods as part of the Neighborhood Project, an ongoing conversation and a series of stories that is going to start appearing here on WFYI next Tuesday morning. All of the stories in this series came from people, from listeners, and all of our ideas. So we hope you will enjoy it. We're going to sort of kick off the conversation today with a group of special guests, starting with Bill Taft, who is the Executive Director of the Local Initiative Support Corporation of Indianapolis, Amandala Anderson, who is the Executive Director of the United Northeast Community Development Corporation, and Imhotep Adiza, who is the Executive Director of the KI Echo Center, which is from Crown Hill Neighborhood. Welcome to all of you. It's good to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I'm gonna start with what is sounds like a simple question, but I suspect is more complex than people realize. What is a neighborhood? What do we consider a neighborhood? Bill, I'll throw that one to you first.
I think a neighborhood is what the neighbors define it to be. And for some people, that's a very small place. It's the area that they can kind of see from their front stoop. And for other people, it's a very large geographic area that's sort of organized around political or economic boundaries. And so it really varies on who you're talking to.
Okay. Amandala?
That's a fun question because I think, like Bill, it's about what you want to see. If you care about your neighbors next door, then that's your neighborhood. If you care about the park that's two streets down from you, that's part of your neighborhood. It's about what you care about the most that makes a community.
Imhotep.
Neighborhood to me is where people live, work, play, fuss, fight, argue, and try to improve the quality of their lives in that area. Often geographically bound, but not always.
So it's sort of like a larger definition of family, then.
Yes, exactly.
to some degree.
An extended family.
Well, I'm going to stick with you then. What makes a neighborhood work?
People. The most important resource in any community are the human beings that live there and the opportunities they have for their own development and for the development of their communities. And so, through my lens, the idea of sustainability has to be tied to opportunities for people to give, contribute, grow, develop, and, of course, take care of themselves.
Bill, I'm going to ask you the same question. What makes a neighborhood work?
I agree it's certainly the people, but it's kind of how the people are engaged. And I think neighborhoods that are healthy have a lot of different ways for people to connect to each other and participate in the life of the neighborhood, whether it's through just one-on-one informal relationships with knowing their neighbors, whether it's taking part in the economy of the neighborhood and actually buying things and selling things, providing services, or whether it's organizing and dealing with larger political or other kinds of issues about what the future of the neighborhood is, but that sort of engaged people who are engaged in ways that vary and but that add up to a really rich social network.
Amandala, I'm going to give you the last crack at it.
I don't know how I can make it any better than the gentleman before me. I would just add that I agree that when we think about neighborhoods and how they work, we need to kind of look at all the pillars within a community. So you're looking at the economy as far as businesses and how you relate to the local businesses and national businesses that are within your neighborhood. There's also the sense of pride that you hold. And how that works, you know, in our neighborhood right now, if my husband cuts the grass, more than likely our neighbor and the two neighbors down will cut theirs too. So it's kind of that, you know, you want to keep up because you see that others care. And then that keeps that momentum going.
We are talking about neighborhoods here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, the neighborhoods are one of those things that, you know, everyone says they want to preserve and all of that. But it seems particularly in this community, they've often been perceived to be, you know, in peril. At some level. I mean, obviously, during the period of the great downtown redevelopment in Indianapolis, there were constant political complaints that there weren't, that not enough attention was being paid to neighborhoods. I mean, we can go on back even to the development of the interstate system and the idea that interstates blasted apart some historic neighborhoods. So what are the primary challenges facing neighborhoods right now? Amandala, I'm going to start with you.
I think for us in the 46218 zip code, it's the perception that there's all this crime happening and that it's labeled for the whole zip code. You know, there is crime happening in our neighborhoods, but I also think that there are a lot of great efforts underway to help derail that crime. And it's not the whole neighborhood. I mean, there's great blocks and streets within our zip code where there are families and seniors still taking care of their homes. Still, you know, I mean, I was out the other day and they were telling me they missed the days that we used to have our streets swept. I mean, I think that they really, you know, it's unfair that there's this huge perception that there's so much crime, and not that there isn't crime, but that it kind of keeps those new families from moving into our neighborhoods.
Bill.
Well, I think there's two challenges for Indianapolis. One is we have neighborhoods that are older that have not had the reinvestment in them that it takes to catch up for the ignoring them for decades, which we did for our sort of core sort of center township neighborhoods. We just really didn't reinvest in their physical infrastructure. We didn't reinvest in the school system. We didn't reinvest in the businesses. And so all that shows. And so it takes a significant reinvestment to catch that back up again. And these are places that have great bones for neighborhoods and great pieces that can be fit together again, and great people who care about that. I think when you get out into the townships, it's a different challenge. These probably never really were neighborhoods in the sense that people weren't as connected, and they weren't built to be neighborhoods. They were built to be often subdivisions where people slept, and they're, you know, single uses, and you can't walk, and there's just challenges that are different. But they're both equally pretty challenging for us as a city.
Imhotep.
Poverty, income inequality, lack of honest, authentic communications around the real challenges of race, class, gender, et cetera. I live in the 46208 neighborhood. You looked at the reports that just came out from the census, I think. Amos Brown has it on his column. Erica Smith has it in the Star, and that these are huge issues that appear to be growing in our communities. Poverty rate 30-40%, and even though that's not limited to a local phenomenon, you know, it's tied to national and global issues. That's the place where we really, really, really have to dig in and start asking some real challenging and difficult questions about what is working, what isn't working, and just need new thought for old problems. And jobs, of course, economic opportunity. And I think all those things tie into the other issues, i.e. crime, et cetera, et cetera. So poverty, income, inequality, and the growing wealth gap.
As part of the Neighborhood Project, we are actually talking about neighborhoods today on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. And when you do reach out to us, if you're comfortable with doing this, why don't you tell us what your neighborhood is and let us talk specifically to that and that neighborhood's challenges and or opportunities. Well, how is Indianapolis stacking up in all of this? I mean, I was born in Cleveland, for example, which is a city that has really struggled. And I spent a couple of years early in my life living in St. Louis, which has an entirely different set of challenges in terms of preserving neighborhoods. And then, you know, about this time last year, I spent a long weekend in Detroit. And I've seen war zones, frankly, that are in better shape, at least in the part of the city that I was in. How does Indianapolis stack up in comparison with some of the other urban centers here in the Midwest? Imhotep.
Well, you know, I'm a Hoosier. I was born here, raised here, so my perspective is, of course, fairly narrow. I read about these other places, Detroit, the challenges Detroit's having, and other midtown cities. You mentioned Cleveland. St. Louis, of course, has been all over the news with the Ferguson question. So I think that, again, the challenges that neighborhoods face, particularly neighborhoods in low-income communities, are probably parallel across the country in a lot of ways. Poverty, wealth gap, income inequality is the challenge of the day in here, and this is tied also to the economic question of globalization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we look at the trend from World War II to the 70s is when we had a growing middle class in America. And I think some of the big challenges now is that something that can be recreated to help address those concerns? Or is there something else going on at a more core root level that we just haven't really got our hands around how to address and how to fix?
Is there a consensus that that the big challenge facing neighborhoods is this widening gap, the economic inequality, and these divisions of race, gender, class? Bill, you're nodding your head.
Well, I think those are huge issues in the neighborhoods. I think that the great thing about working at the neighborhood scale is you can break that down to more concrete challenges and address them sort of at the smaller scale. I think it's easy when you talk about larger social issues that are really international to say, well, there's nothing we can do about it here, or the things that we can do about it here are hard to see a concrete result from. And the thing I've always enjoyed about this work is that you can actually say, okay, well, I can't do anything about global trade from where I sit, but I can help establish a local business in my neighborhood that is going to employ some people from our community and provide a service that makes people want to live here. And that, I think that's the beauty of neighborhood development and community development is you can get people who actually really approach these things from widely different perspectives on what the issues even are, let alone what the solutions are, yet find concrete things to work on together.
Amandala, do you agree that those are the big issues confronting neighborhoods?
Yeah, I would definitely agree, both of them.
Well, it sounds like, from what I'm hearing then from the three of you, is that the approach here, and we're talking about globalization, obviously, is I'm not sure it's something anybody ever votes on. It's a force that sort of assumes its own momentum. Is the response here then the one that is most likely to work, just this purely local one, you know, bright in the corner where you are kind of approach, Bill?
Well, I think you have to work at those things at the macro and the local level. I mean, I guess my feel like my calling is to work on it at the local level. So there's a lot of great people who look at it from the other side. I think that there are differences from city to city on those issues. And Indianapolis is experiencing some things right now that are kind of late to the party on. It's not a very great party, and that is sort of disinvestment from where your loss of tax base from a city, and as development and new investment in people with wealth move beyond the city limits. And because we did Unigov, we basically delayed that for a couple of generations. We captured sprawl inside our city limits. And so we end up in a different place today than a lot of other cities that had that happen to them a couple of generations ago because they didn't get bigger physically. So the sprawl left them sooner. And so we're now facing issues that are a little different, I think, here in Indianapolis as a whole, that just may cause us to have to frame this a little differently.
We are talking about neighborhoods here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Bill Taft, Amandala Anderson, and Imhotep Adiza. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about neighborhoods. It's kind of an informal kickoff to the Neighborhood Project, a series of stories that is going to begin appearing here on WFYI next Tuesday. All of these stories are generated by the folks who actually live in the neighborhoods. The ideas came from them. My guests are Bill Taft, who's Executive Director of Local Initiative Support Corporation of Indianapolis, Amandala Anderson, who is the Executive Director of the United Northeast Community Development Corporation, and Imhotep Adiza, who is Executive Director of the KI Echo Center, which is from the Crown Hill neighborhood. We've gotten an email question, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so by sending it to nolimits@wfyi.org. This is from a listener named Keith who says, I live in Mapleton Fall Creek. There is a major road every three blocks. These streets are over 90% residential. However, very little, if nothing at all, is done to slow traffic down or decrease it as it goes by houses. Neighborhoods with major roads cutting through have a higher percentage of vacant homes due to people not wanting to live around heavy traffic. What is being done traffic-wise to make neighborhoods more livable? Bill, I'll start with you on that one.
Well, I agree that is a big problem. I think the traffic engineers of the 70s and 80s and probably 60s were primarily trying to move cars quickly through neighborhoods and not caring about the quality of life in those neighborhoods, particularly in urban neighborhoods. So now we're trying to go back and fix that. Mm-hmm. And I think that is now starting to happen. I think even traffic engineers are starting to understand that that needs to happen in some places. I think there's some good examples out there. Just near here at the studio here at 16th and Delaware, there's somewhat controversial fix put in place mm-hmm. to try to slow people down on Delaware going north. East 10th Street, there was a very extensive streetscape project done there as part of the whole Super Bowl Legacy Initiative that really slowed down traffic. And really what it's trying to do is balance back towards other modes of transportation of people walking, people biking, and people living there.
How important is that whole question of walkability? I know, you know, Jane Jacobs, the writer about urban communities who, when she wasn't bedeviling Robert Moses in New York, made the argument that really that's one of the central pieces of creating livable neighborhoods is that you need to be able to get around without using your car. Amandala.
I'd say, I mean, realistically, a lot of our neighbors don't have vehicles. I mean, if we look at the ridership, especially in Center Township and on the east side of individuals who don't have a car, we've got to start creatively thinking about how do we get to places. The transit discussions that we're having right now they're going in the right, I think, direction. I was excited. I went to one of the information sessions they had last week. So they're having these information sessions with planners now in the community and I think it's everyone's welcome to attend. But it was very clear coming out of there that it's not just about changing the bus system. We have to look at all modes of transportation. It has to be walkability. It has to have the bicyclists have to have, you know, feel free. You know, if you have a motorcycle, you need to be able to have that leisure of riding your motorcycle. As a city, we're starting in that direction. But I think, as Bill said, we're just now starting to really look at and seriously look at transportation and be multimodal. And we haven't really done that. We've relied on Indigo too much to make changes for our city. And I think that's part of the process now is now let's really let the people of the city of Indianapolis, thanks to the movements that we're having within our city, to really let them decide how we want to see transportation work in our communities.
Imhotep.
It's extremely important. Climate change is the challenge of the day. Sunday there was the largest climate change march in the history of the world. 400,000 people converged on Manhattan. So the more we can walk, the more we can ride our bikes, the personal and direct impact that Bill referred to earlier, we can all have on the critical issue of climate change. I live at 25th and Boulevard, which is a mile from where we work. Several of us live right there in the neighborhood. Some walk, some ride their bikes. And those of us who don't do that, carpool there, so critical and important.
We are talking about neighborhoods here on No Limits in anticipation of the Neighborhood Project. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. What's on your mind?
Well, it looks like to me that the issues of race and class and income inequality that were brought up later, that the city's leadership is not really interested in focusing on that. It looks like to me that the mayor's call for bringing in all...
Oops. Looks like we lost Jim, but the, it sounded like where he was going with that question involved basically a kind of failure of will among the leadership of the city, that unwillingness to confront basic issues, the issues in particular that Imhotep has been raising, but I think you all concur with. Do you see that there is an unwillingness to engage on these issues? Imhotep, I'll start with you, but I'm going to give everybody a crack at that.
Well, yeah. You know, you start talking about issues like race, it makes people uncomfortable. We get, insensitive. We don't live in a culture that encourages real, authentic, and critical communications without attack. And you know, we have a long history of race challenges in America that just makes it difficult to address. So, yeah, it needs to be addressed, yes, from the leadership level, but also at the community level. And as many opportunities as we can find to raise those questions, have real authentic conversations, I think it moves us closer to being able to solve some of these problems. I was at an event at Christmas Attucks Saturday, Moral Monday. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with that initiative. Mm-hmm. But it tries to address that in a lot of different ways. And I think one way that you help the city has a dilemma, and it's about funding, dollars, et cetera. And so when you start tackling these other issues, this makes it more complicated. But I do think citizens have a responsibility to raise those questions, put pressure on this leadership to start trying to have these real conversations all around the city.
Bill, is it a failure of will at the leadership level?
You know, I think it's the way you actually change those things at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
Are a lot more complicated than having a rally and or a conversation about it. Mm-hmm. It's about making hard changes in systems, and that is very difficult to do because you start changing things, and it hurts people individually when you make those changes, and those people push back, and you know whether the system is a school system or a police department, or whether it's a you know, how we plow our streets or how we do, you know, investment in neighborhoods. So it's I think that it has to be The way those things get addressed is people being better organized around them at the granular level of actually the long slog of making systems better and holding people accountable and deciding what you're really trying to accomplish in a school district. Is it employing people or is it educating people? And then making hard decisions based on that, for example. But you could use that same example in all those other systems. And that's the most challenging part, I think, for leaders is keeping those big ideas in mind while making those really day-to-day politically charged little things they have to decide. And I think being a mayor is one of the hardest jobs in the world of any city or any other elected official at the local level, because there is real specific tangibility about did people get their services. But then there's these larger issues they're supposed to be dealing with too. And I think we just all need to push on those things at the part where it affects us individually or as our neighborhood.
Jim, I hope we did justice to your question. If not, please give us a buzz back. We're sorry about dropping the call. If you would like to join the conversation, as Jim did, by giving us a call at 866-476-3881, you can do so. You can also find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can reach out to us by email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Or you can do as Alvin has done, reach out to us on Twitter. Just find us there at WFYI. Alvin says, how do you improve neighborhoods without gentrifying the neighborhood or displacing people, which seems to be an ongoing challenge here? Andala, I'm going to give you the first crack at that one.
You know, we just finished going through a quality of life planning process with our community. We had over 900 businesses, individuals, residents, stakeholders within our community that were engaged. The West Side group just finished theirs as well this past Saturday. And I would say that one of our things that we are really proud about is we empowered our neighbors to believe that they can be the change makers, that it's not only the city officials or our county council persons that make the change, but that they have the power to make the change, and helping them understand what does that power look like so that then they can do that. So I think that part of helping our community understand it, so that they are able to be part of the change, is that they are actually the change makers.
How big a force, though, is gentrification in all of this? Is it ultimately a good thing for neighborhoods, or is it a destructive force? We'll start with you, Bill.
Well, one of the things that I think we have to keep in mind is in Indianapolis and Center Township, between 1960 and 2010, we lost 57% of its population. And so many of our neighborhoods could double their population and not displace anybody. Mm-hmm. So it's really a different conversation here than in places like New York or on the West Coast, where gentrification, where people are literally being pushed out by the economics of a neighborhood. And there's just not enough room for all the people who want to live there. It's really more a question of the culture of the neighborhood,
If I can step in, and I don't mean to interrupt. But is it also sometimes what happens with gentrification, too, is that the people who were there before can no longer afford to live in the neighborhood once the property values begin to climb?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of – there's myth around gentrification, there's reality. Mm-hmm. And the actual reality is the people who live in a neighborhood as it gentrifies are less likely to move than the people who are in neighborhoods that aren't gentrifying, and that's been researched nationally. The question is what happens when that person does move, who replaces them? And that changes the culture of a neighborhood, and that is important to the people who live there. And what it requires is people who are new in a neighborhood, the only neighborhoods that don't have new people moving in are dying neighborhoods. And so neighborhoods churn all the time as far as who lives there, and you really just have to have a civic conversation and a life of that neighborhood where the new people and the longtime residents actually share power, share conversations, and how things get decided and done in the neighborhood.
Imhotep.
Again, you know, gentrification is a word that sparks emotions and ideas, and it's all, again, depends on how you define it. And often it is defined through the lens of displacement and power. The challenge with development is that often the developmental models there's the effort made to be inclusive, but, you know, it's about money. It's about how do you bring infrastructure and money back into communities that have been dying for a lot of reasons. But we have to include gentrification in the conversation, and Bill referred to the idea of system thinking. So we need to include that idea in the front end to say, okay, as we bring this development in, as we look to improve the quality of life in these communities, how can we mitigate and reduce any negative potential impacts that may occur on existing residents and existing communities? And even if some of that is about mythology and people not having clear ideas what that means, perception is reality. And if residents say, these folks are moving in, our rent's going to go up, we're going to get displaced, that's an issue that we really have to try to figure out how to address on the front end and not on the back end. So it's important.
We are talking about neighborhoods here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Erin, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, my question is rooted in connection. I'd love to know if the panel has experienced or has any advice regarding neighborhoods that we don't have connection. And what I mean by that is I think it's a lot has to do with living in a digital world, also a commuter society where we're traveling to and from work. And we're just not connected as we were, as I remember, as a child. And I'd just love to know if the panel has experienced that in any neighborhoods that have kind of overcome that challenge or any ideas.
Thanks very much for the call. Very good question, Erin.
Thank you. Thanks.
Well, Amandala.
I can start. Irvington's a great example of a community that's really prideful in their neighborhood. They have a Facebook page for Irvington Neighbors. And sometimes it gets a little bit, there's a burglar here, or, it's a lot of crime reporting just to be aware. But a lot of times it's just that, hey, my brother just started this company. Do you guys have any ideas? I've lost my dog. Can you help me and figure out where my dog is? The Halloween festival's this week. Are you guys coming? They've done a really great job of using social networks to connect each other, even though this is, it's a little bit out from the city. It's about 3 miles from downtown. But they love the idea of being close to the city and being connected to downtown. But they've done a great job of just staying connected in their social networks. Irvington also does a great job of creating many community councils or groups, organizations. They have a photography club, a million book clubs. They have a garden club. They have a lot of power within their neighborhood because they've created all these clubs to be a part of the community. And it gives different people who have different kind of ideas and hobbies different ways to be engaged.
Do we romanticize, though? I mean, to some degree, I remember, I'm really not supposed to talk about my age on the radio, but let's just say I've seen more than a couple of springtimes. And, I remember, obviously, it was nothing to have children running around the neighborhood when I was a kid. That was the typical experience. But that also was because it was at a time when a lot of women weren't working, that, the economic opportunities for a lot of women and for other people weren't necessarily there. Is the some of the changes that we've seen in neighborhoods, are they a product of the fact that in some ways we have opened up society and opened up economic opportunities in ways that didn't exist, 30, 40, 50 years ago? Bill.
I think that the neighborhoods we have are a product of where we put our emphasis over the last 50 years. And we've really focused on independence, whether it's a car, whether it's where you live, et cetera, economically. And that really cost us when it comes to neighborhoods. And so I think that's changing. I think younger people are actually hungry to live in community that is where they actually are known by their neighbor. And that's encouraging to me that's a national trend, and I see that here too. But we don't have gotten our neighborhoods to the point where that's easy to encourage people to do. And there's barriers in the way, and that's what we spend a lot of time trying to do is deal with those barriers, but also encourage people to restitch themselves in these relationships again. And there's a lot of exciting ways that that's happening in neighborhoods all over the city.
Could you give me an example?
One example that I'm real familiar with, because my wife's worked on it, is this: our city suppers, and they're basically encouraging people to basically get together with their neighbors once a month to start out with, but ideally once a week, and share a meal and trade around to different houses every time you get together, and just get to know the people who live near you. That's one example right there that's informal, and there's a lot more formal versions out there.
We are talking about neighborhoods here on No Limits. My guests are Bill Taft, Amandala Anderson, and Imhotep Adiza. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about neighborhoods in anticipation of the Neighborhood Project, a series of stories that's going to start appearing here on WFYI next Tuesday. My guests are Bill Taft, who is the executive director of Local Initiative Support Corporation of Indianapolis, Amandala Anderson, who is the executive director of the United Northeast Community Development Corporation, and Imhotep Adiza, who is the executive director of the KI Echo Center, which is in the Crown Hill neighborhood. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. David, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is a great program. I am a I grew up in 46218 proudly, lived there for many years, but wound up having to leave because money wasn't coming into that neighborhood, and also jobs were not coming into that neighborhood. I'd like to know if there are any parts of this initiative that will bring more money in, such as using a program, an expansion of a program like INHP's program that teaches homeowners about how to own a home and what kinds of things they have to do in order to own a home so that they can get loans from banks to get the houses rehabbed and not have gentrification take over. And then the other thing, one of the issues that came up a ways back in the Hillside Martindale neighborhood was Major Tool and Machine Corporation. We worked with them, and they promised us they would bring 100 jobs to us and training in exchange for them some expansion that they did. Are those kinds of things going on?
Thanks very much for the call and the questions, David. Imhotep, I noticed you were looking over my way while he was talking. So,
oh, I was just in agreement that you need economic opportunities in communities. People do need to be informed about purchasing houses, et cetera. But you can't buy a house if you're not working. If you don't have economic opportunities, or if the opportunities you do have don't generate enough resources to allow you to do those things, I agree with the caller. And yes, I think that that it's important for businesses and anchor institutions and communities to focus on not only their bottom lines and not only their core missions, but those elements that will help revitalize community. So I agree.
Got an email from a listener named Pambana. I hope I pronounced that right. Mm-hmm. What do you say to those who feel that community development is about infrastructure, housing, and beautification, but not about providing real opportunities for those who are struggling to improve the quality of their lives, access quality education, real involvement in determining the direction of their communities, economic opportunities? Bill and Amandala, I'll let you guys have a crack at that one, whichever one of you would like to go first.
Well, when you look at what the emphasis in community development has been over the last decade here in Indianapolis, I think we have put a lot of emphasis on a comprehensive community development approach. That's embodied in 7 neighborhoods that have created quality of life plans, and these plans really address everything from the issues about education and health and public safety and recreation and all those aspects, as well as the physical development. And ultimately, we believe that if you only help people individually improve their situation, as they individually improve their situation, there's a good chance they will leave a neighborhood that's challenged. If you only work on the neighborhood and don't help individuals, those individuals won't benefit from that in the long run. And so you have to do both those things simultaneously.
We are talking about neighborhoods here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Cameron, welcome to the program.
I just kind of had a quick comment and then a question. Along with the idea of connectivity and walkability in neighborhoods, I was wondering if there's any thought about, you know, the old corner store side of a thing. And that kind of follows into my next. I have a historic preservation background. What about historic preservation is being considered in these initiatives? And I can just take the comments off the air.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. Well, who would like to go first? Amandala?
I can start. So I think preservation is actually pretty close to my heart just because of my work in Irvington, that I kind of have been able to recognize the need for new and old and how you merge that together. You know, we've got several homes within our communities right now that are in duress, and the city is trying to, they're using some of the hardest hit funds, for example, to help tear some of those houses down. I think that that's part of it, but I also think that as we talked about earlier about changing the neighborhoods, human confirmation transformation is so important within our community, and that part of what we're doing, for example, in the Meadows area is taking that human transformation when you look at the education and health and wellness and quality affordable housing. It's putting community development is really looking at how do we make a holistic approach or take a holistic approach and look at urban cores. When he talked about the corner stores again, our neighborhoods aren't walkable because there's no grocery store. We live in food deserts, so they're not walking 4 or 8 blocks. They're having to get on the bus, you know, 20-plus blocks. If you look at 38th Street, for example, there is no grocery store between High School Road all the way out almost to Carroll Road. That's a huge issue for our neighborhoods when you have a major thoroughfare, the number one, number two bus line in the city, and we don't have a grocery store on that thoroughfare. I mean, that speaks to the walkability and how important it is that we need it.
Well, I'm going to try to just give one of you a shot on each of these because we've got so many calls, emails, tweets, and Facebook messages coming in. Got a question from a listener on Facebook. If you want to reach out to us on Facebook, do so at No Limits WFYI. This is Nathan saying, a number of the topics and points that have come up in the program seem to be contingent upon work for people, companies. Example, Eli Lilly and Indy. Provide jobs for people to live in the area. Then other service industries, restaurants, markets, etc. follow, thus further increasing the jobs and opportunities. It also seems that when large companies decline, example, car companies in Detroit, Michigan, neighborhoods also decline. To the panel, for Indianapolis and its neighborhoods to grow, what type of efforts could Indy make to bring large job-making companies? Bill, I'll throw that one your way.
Well, there's some great efforts that go into bringing large employers and keeping large employers in the region. The area that we tend to focus on is, where are those jobs going, and are people prepared to have those jobs from neighborhoods that have been left out of the economic opportunity? And they're both important. So I think as far as one of the challenges we've had as a city is because of Unigov, we didn't really care where jobs went in Marion County over for a long time, as long as they were in the city limits. And we're only now really starting to focus on what are the types of industries that are growing in our region that could actually be located and prosper in the old industrial parts of our city that are closer to where there's higher unemployment rates. And then are we also training people for those kinds of jobs? Just because the jobs are in a neighborhood doesn't mean that people are going to get those if people don't have the skill sets. So you have to do both.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Paulette who says, what is the responsibility of major institutions, businesses, and nonprofits to their surrounding neighborhoods? Imhotep, I'm going to throw that one your way.
Paulette, I probably know that. It's probably our Paulette at the Eagle Center. Okay.
So she teed one up for you.
Yeah. Thanks, Paulette. Okay. Well, the skinny is we believe that anchor institutions, they're connected to power, they're connected to resources, and they have a critical role in trying to assist those that have not gained any advantages to improving the quality of their lives. Bill mentioned the match of skills with jobs, and that is important. I think we should also, new thoughts are needed for these old problems. Some of that may also a closer look at local economic development through neighborhood cleanup. Let's create a funding that will allow those folks who are struggling to improve their skill set to make money, make some work right now, work weekend work or something along that lines. These properties that are abandoned, that need grass cutting, can we come up with some creative ideas to create economic opportunities for those who need to eat yesterday?
We are talking about neighborhoods here on No Limits. Ron, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Just a couple of comments. One, I've not really heard anybody come out and mention the fact that really the neighborhoods started to decline, probably 30 years ago when they started closing schools and started shifting around populations and kids to other schools. My second comment is I'm sitting here listening to, and not to be negative towards your panel, but I'm listening to a whole bunch of highly overeducated people trying to solve a very simple problem. Nobody's mentioned anything about going out and talking to the people that live in these neighborhoods on a simple, simple basis and asking them, what are the simple things that they would like? We keep trying to complicate this issue. The majority of the people want a neighborhood that's safe, convenient, and they feel comfortable in. Now, whether they got 52 little corner stores, they don't care. They want the basic services, the basic necessities that they can sit on their porch and feel comfortable. And I think we've overcomplicated this issue. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. Ron, Bill, would you like to respond?
Well, I'd be interested to know the simple solutions to these things, but I think it's the point of asking the people who live in neighborhoods and that also the people who have businesses there, et cetera, what they would like to see in their community is sort of the foundation of the work that we do. And when I talked about quality of life plans, when Amandala talked about that process in our neighborhood, that's exactly what that does is gather hundreds and thousands of people to give input into what they'd like to see in their community and also then take responsibility for some part of that. And that's the key part.
Tina sends us a tweet that almost – it wasn't sent in response to Ron's call, but almost sounds like it responds to it. She says, I love being able to walk and bike everywhere in Meridian Kessler. Two restaurants – bars and grocery store in particular. So obviously it seems those things are important to her. Is some of this too, I mean, to get Ron's point though, I mean, not everybody expects the same thing from a neighborhood. I mean, to assume that there is some monolithic view about what people want from neighborhoods is probably an error too, right, Amandala?
Yeah, I think that it's, you know, what we try to do is really look at what the neighborhoods desire to be. And to be honest, it's all about timing. It's about what resources are available right then. How do we tap our neighborhood up so that it's ready for resources that come? And part of the quality of life plan is, okay, what do you guys think we should be doing so that if there's a grant opportunity or a federal or local grant that comes along, we want to be ready for that opportunity to come. But I would say, you know, schools are definitely important. You know, when we think about families moving back into our neighborhoods, we really have to take that into consideration. But I'd also say that we have some awesome charter schools that like Tinley Accelerated School that, you know, is Blue Ribbon, which is, you know, one of very few in the state of Indiana. And these are schools that are within the neighborhood reusing old IPS schools like Kip Indy, which is off of 30th Street. I mean, I think that we have to really start to continue to be creative about what are ways that we can engage our community, but also know that there's some givens. There's some givens that you have to do. You've got to have, you know, education. You've got to have infrastructure. You've got to have quality, affordable housing. And to be honest, we haven't said it enough, but we have to have a local grocery store. We have to have, if it's a corner store, if it's a farm stand, if it's garden on the go, whatever that is a necessity for every single person to have food. And right now, our neighbors, they're going to the convenience stores, the gas stations, you know, the Dollar Generals. That's where they're getting their groceries. So, of course, they're not eating well. So then what does that say about us again? That's why we have the highest rate of high blood pressure and cholesterol and heart issues in our neighborhood, because we don't have the necessities that we need to have healthy living.
We are talking about neighborhoods here on No Limits. George, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I want to say congratulations to the positive changes that are taking place in so many neighborhoods. It's a national change. So many people are benefiting and enjoying a better lifestyle. But what is a puzzle to me is that the biggest changes have occurred within the neighborhoods, primarily the black community, the inner cities, where crime was the highest. Crime was so bad that it seemed that you used to hear that the police were scared to come in the neighborhoods. But right now, they have basically cleaned up those neighborhoods. The school systems were so bad. And I think that was the number one factor, uneducated black folks. And many of the homes was less favorable and really considered bad neighborhoods. How can other races have the leadership to direct them to pursue this inner city, this better way of life, have the vision to see what's there? But the blacks seem like they didn't get the memo. They were in the neighborhoods. They had the best, which was the worst, and is going to be the best. But nobody led them to play a role. Why wasn't blacks led to play a role in this new development? Do they have any leadership in the black community? That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call and the question. So I'll broaden that a little bit. In declining neighborhoods, what are the factors, you know, what leadership factors help turn those neighborhoods around? Imhotep.
Bold and courageous leadership. But
define that. I mean, take me beyond the word.
Sure. I want to first speak directly to the caller's inquiry, which it sounds to me as if he feels that there's a lack of black leadership in some of these communities. And, you know, I just beg to differ. I live at 25th and Boulevard. I've lived there 30 years. I'm black. I've been active in my own way for that length of time, raised children there. So I think often this issue of development and leadership development is tied to resources that are available in those communities and their relationship to power. Now, lastly, on the question of power, I do think, again, it goes back to the question about honest conversations around race, inclusion. I know Bill and others could speak to the challenges of having those conversations, including others in that initiative of all races.
And I think that probably will have to be the last word. Unfortunately, I apologize to all of our listeners who have sent email questions, Facebook messages, tweets, and have tried to call that we weren't able to get to. Obviously, this is just the beginning of a conversation here at WFYI, and I would encourage you to listen to the Neighborhood Project starting next Tuesday. I'd also like to thank my guests, Bill Taft, who's the Executive Director of Local Initiative Support Corporation of Indianapolis, Amandala Anderson, who is Executive Director of the United Northeast Community Development Corporation, and Imhotep Adiza, Executive Director of the KI Echo Center. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.